Welcome back to University of Minnesota Extension's Nutrient Management Podcast. I'm your host, Paul McDivitt, Communications Specialist here at U of M Extension. Today on the podcast, we're talking about post-planting management of nitrogen. We have six members of Extension's Nutrient Management Team: Dan Kaiser, Annie Nelson, Fabian Fernandez, Greg Klinger, Brad Carlson, and Jeff Fetch, to cover the basics and beyond. Welcome. Why don't you each give us a quick introduction?
Hi, I'm Jeff Fetch. I'm a researcher and soil scientist at the Southern Research and Outreach Center in Waseca.
I'm Dan Kaiser. I'm a state soil specialist focusing on nutrient guidelines for the majority of the commodity crops.
Brad Carlson. I'm an extension educator. Work out of the regional office in Mankato. Deal with nutrient management and water quality issues statewide.
Annie Nelson. I'm an extension educator out of the St. Cloud regional office, and I deal with nitrogen management and water quality.
Greg Klinger, extension educator, mostly dealing with nitrogen management in the southeast part of the state.
And I'm Fabian Fernandez, nutrient management specialist from the campus here in St. Paul. And I work primarily on nitrogen management for corn cropping systems and water quality.
All right, let's get started with the first question. How important is nitrogen applied prior to planting?
Well, it seems like it depends. For farmers, it's very important. It helps them sleep well. You know that their nitrogen is applied before planting. For the plant, actually, it's not that important. I mean, the plants need nitrogen, but not a huge amount. And so it is important to help the plant develop, but typically there is enough in the soil that you don't really need to apply a huge amount of nitrogen for that crop to start, especially in corn after soybean systems. In continuous corn, that's more of a priority, I would say. In those systems, in continuous corn, you want to have a little bit of nitrogen, but again, you don't need a huge amount because the plants don't really need very much early on.
Yeah, I would say I would agree with you, Fabian, especially in corn after soybeans, you need very little. You could probably go out there and plant your corn and side dress it without any minimal risk. But in corn on corn, I think it's important that if you don't have some on at planting or prior to planting, that you side dress extraordinarily early and don't wait very long.
I think it's important to mention the fact, I think it's probably obvious to everyone, one of the reasons why we're covering this as a topic is the amount of fertilizer that normally would have gotten applied last fall or also this spring, as it's been a very wet year and delayed spring, farmers just simply aren't getting the fertilizer on the way they intended to. And so I think it is important to think about what your options are and don't just simply think that you need to delay planting until you can get your fertilizer applied.
Well, I think that's one of the things that Brad brought up. You know, we don't really know what the spring's going to be like, but I think the main question is in areas where they didn't get the planned nitrogen on. And, you know, one of the things I like about this discussion really boils back down to the fact that, you know, people taking some what I would call risky practices in fall just to get the nitrogen on. And I know certainly there's some logistics there for the retailers in terms of storage, but, you know, storing on the ground isn't necessarily a good idea if the ground's frozen, because it really isn't going to be much storage on the ground. And it, you know, frankly, you know, looking at, you know, where it's going to flow out the field, it, you almost could unload it in the spots in the ditches. It's going to end up probably in those spots anyway for if it's applied to frozen ground. So you just got to kind of be careful. So it's one of the things, you know, looking at these fall, and we don't know what the spring's going to be like, is just looking at other options that are out there. You know, we have more flexibility with nitrogen, so that's the main thing with it. And maybe not as much in irrigated. I don't know, you know, looking at options there. I mean, it might be a little more like corn on corn with that. But just, you know, having multiple options is really a good practice. And if you have the ability to wait in the spring and make sure you get things planted.
I know we were talking here before we started recording about the whole issue of if you've got your nitrogen ordered and you're waiting to plant or you're ready to plant and you know that the application is imminent, but you're ready to go in that one particular field and the applicator hasn't been out there yet. Let's just say you're having surface applied urea put on. You know, it's probably really not that important to be delaying planting at all if you know that the application is imminent, maybe even yet that day or within the next day or so, because it's that close. Just simply get planted when you can plant.
Yeah, and I think that that is a very important point because depending on how the spring comes, sometimes you just have enough of a window to either apply or plant. And I would say plant, even in continuous corn, because the chance that you will have enough time to apply nitrogen after planting, before the plants really are affected by the lack of nitrogen, if that's the condition that you have in your field, it's pretty limited. You normally have enough of a window to apply that nitrogen, but every day that you delay planting, it's another day that you're starting to reduce the yield potential of that crop.
All right, what options are available to farmers to apply nitrogen at or after planting?
Well, I think one of the things that, you know, we focus a lot on starter fertilizer, and that's, you know, if there is some concern about not having enough, particularly with growers that may have be shifting away from in-furrow because they aren't seeing as much value. I mean, we've done a lot of work. You know, Jeff, you've done a lot of work with surface dribble band with the planter, and I think there is some options out there, particularly with nitrogen and sulfur, which may, you know, make that, you know, a decent option. And Fabian, there were some studies too looking at that too, putting on a roughly about 30 pounds or so. I mean, the main thing is, you know, looking at when you can get back in, I think, and get a second application. If that's going to be your option, you need to kind of, with your rates, set your rates based on that timing. If you're not going to get back in soon, you might want to up that rate a little bit more and push it a little bit more. But, you know, that's definitely an option because we see situations where, I mean, unless you're in some really high pH soils with low P, that in-furrow doesn't always do a whole lot, particularly with situations where growers have already, you know, high or very high phosphorus. So, I mean, looking at a separate option like that would allow you to use that equipment you may already have on the planter and just, you know, maybe do some easy modifications to it to divert where that fertilizer is being applied.
Another situation where I think starter is really critical is for growers that do cover crops. You often see that you know, especially a grass like cereal rye that can pull a lot of nitrogen out as it decomposes, creates a situation where corn cannot have really or can need a lot right there by the seed. So having either a dribble band or 2x2 of 30, sometimes up to 50 pounds is really critical in those situations.
The other thing that is important to consider when you are applying fertilizer after planting is the positioning of that fertilizer and what happens in those conditions. So for instance, in springs when it's wet and cool, if you go with an anhydrous application, typically it takes those plants a little bit of time to get to that fertilizer band. And so you may look at your field and see that corn is so pale and not growing very well. And then it will take off, and that's simply because of the positioning of that nitrogen. It takes those roots a little bit longer to get to that nitrogen, but once they reach the band of fertilizer, then the crop will develop fine.
I know there's a lot of questions regarding how much fertilizer you want to put on with the planter. I know I always suggest to guys, well, obviously, if you're dribbling it on with the seed, you know, you do have some concerns, but there's a lot of, we're kind of going back to a lot of application technology that's either laying it on the surface or going off to the side again. That's been more commercially available. I think a lot of guys need to think about how often they feel like filling their fertilizer tanks, because that tends to be maybe a larger concern. I've had a lot of guys say, well, I thought I'd put a lot on until after every three rounds I had to come back and fill the tank again, and then I realized that maybe that wasn't such a good idea. I don't, Jeff, you've had a little more experience with some of the products in furrow as far as how much you dare put on in contact with the seed, right?
Well, we've always used the rule of thumb of nitrogen and potassium and sulfur no greater than 15 pounds in furrow, and I think that's a pretty hard and fast rule. So when you add those three nutrients up, that isn't very much. So you're going to need, as Dan mentioned, you're going to need some kind of surface dribble band that's not in the furrow, and maybe even off a couple inches off the row if you're going to raise these rates of N, K, and S above that 10 to 15 pounds.
And I usually say, you know, more probably closer to 10 pounds with that, because, I mean, you look at what the investment in seed is right now, particularly with in-furrow, if you're investing over $300 a bag, I mean, that's a substantial amount of money to put out there and to risk some damage with that. So, I mean, really looking at keeping those rates low, and really with nitrogen in-furrow, I mean, the urea is, it's a big component of it. I mean, it's really anything that liberates ammonium. and it has a tendency to have ammonium hanging around, so you just have to be careful with that. So there's some options, but it just really isn't going to completely get you where you need to be with a complete application if you need more than 10 pounds.
One of the other factors that I think is going to come into play for some growers this spring is we've seen more and more of people impregnating their herbicides or pre-emerge or pre-plant herbicides on urea. And if some of these spring applications are delayed at their dealer level or wherever and those things don't get on, that causes some concerns and issues. And it's possible that you could, if you switch to putting your herbicides on pre-emerge or after planting, that you could use UAN as a carrier for those herbicides as part of your end supply and then follow up with the remainder of it at a later date. And that would buy you some opportunity time too as well.
I think that just gives a good excuse for looking at pre-emerge at that point too, if you're looking at it, because we've seen a lot of instances out there with you get, particularly with some of the hard to touch weeds like the ragweeds and stuff out there, you see some pretty weedy fields, so it's kind of nice to at least give you an opportunity to do.
The biggest risk there is just to make sure that corn isn't spiking if you're going out there with UAN as a carrier for a pre-emerge herbicide, because it can be pretty hard on it.
And if you mix ATS in with that as well, too, it gets even worse.
The other thing, too, is with urea broadcast applications, if you're leaving that urea on the surface, obviously after planting, making sure that you have rain in the forecast so that it will incorporate or use a urease inhibitor such as Agrotain, for instance, as a way to buy you a little bit longer time for incorporation with rain to avoid volatilization losses is an important thing to keep in mind, especially in no-till fields or fields with a lot of crop residue.
Well, and then also on the other side, Fabian, if there's not a lot of residue, we could see it very dry on the surface and high temperatures, which can also drive that too. So both extremes with residue can cause that volatilization loss out of urea and really make it pay to put a urease inhibitor in it.
I mean, really, when we talk about some of these post-planting options, particularly with urea spread on the surface, I mean, the urease inhibitors, I think there is some advantage for that, particularly when we don't know when we're going to get a rainfall, and we really like to see, I think, about a quarter inch rainfall or so to get that effectively incorporated, but it still doesn't mean we're not going to lose some of it. I mean, I had a question about UAN and, you know, whether or not you would include something with that, and I mean, I think it really depends on rate. If you're going with most applications, I think, that are with herbicides, I don't think I would really worry too much about it. But the question was specific to a grower that was putting a heavier load of nitrogen on, more of it if you'd be putting that down more than maybe 10 gallons of UAN or 28%, would you recommend it? And it's a tough one because really the options out there, I think, with a urease inhibitor, really are Agrotain Plus, based on everything I've seen. And maybe, I don't know if Koch, one of their new products out there, they have some urease inhibitors on it. But some of the other ones out there really haven't shown much effectiveness on the urease activity. So I think I would kind of be careful with some of that. And then on the nitrification side, I mean, I don't know if anybody has any comments with at this given point in time, once you start getting post-plant, I've never really been overly, you know, a proponent of nitrification inhibitors at that point in time, except maybe on some sandy soil. So
yeah, definitely. So when we look at our BMPs, we do recommend if you are going to put all that nitrogen on early in the season in those sandy soils to use an inhibitor, because it's going to get you out at least a few more days than if you didn't. Of course, we would still prefer a split application or several in those sandy soils. But another thing you also need to think about is if you are putting these on, these nitrification inhibitors, is that it's a lot warmer in the spring and in the summer in those soil temps. And these nitrification inhibitors really start to degrade a lot faster than in the fall when it's much colder. So that's something to think about. You know, maybe you're thinking you would have gotten 10 days on average with this inhibitor, and it's probably going to be shorter now because of those higher temps. So also something to think about, you know, I don't really hear of anybody putting them on the heavier soils. You know, it's probably not your best bet, maybe for the fall application, but definitely not after planting.
Yeah, I think it's important to look at these things in terms of the probability of getting a benefit out of them. It's not that the nitrification inhibitor doesn't work in the spring. It's just simply, well, as Annie said, that the efficacy of them typically gets reduced because it's warmer, so they degrade faster. And then the other thing is, what is the probability that you will lose that nitrogen before the plant can use it? And so in a fall application, for instance, when we apply anhydrous ammonia with a nitrification inhibitor, well, that makes sense because you have a really long window of opportunity for that nitrogen to be lost. And so anything you can do to preserve that nitrogen in the ammonium form, you have better chance of that inhibitor working for you. In the spring, especially after planting, typically you don't have as much of an opportunity for that inhibitor to work to your advantage. It won't reduce your yields, but it will. You'll be paying for something that you don't really necessarily need.
Yeah, it's important to remember that nitrogen loss, nitrate loss, is water driven, and the conversion to nitrate is microbial in nature, so controlled by temperature. So as it gets warmer, that's going to happen faster. But early in the growing season, it's still relatively cool. We're talking about at planting time. And so your conversion to nitrate is going to still be relatively slow at that point. So your risk to denitrification, while it certainly exists, it's really not as severe at planting time as it is some of these years when it gets really wet late in the year. Like 2014, it was wet in June, and it was wet until the end of June. When the soil temperatures are really warm, that's where our extreme risk is to loss for denitrification, to lose large quantities of the nitrogen we applied. As with last year, we saw some of those circumstances also. So your as Fabian says, your risk to loss just simply isn't quite that great when you're dealing with these applications at about planting time. And the thing about it is, you know, as Annie talked about, as it gets warmer, the nitrification inhibitor gets used up basically. And so when we get to the point where we also see there's risk, well, the odds are the nitrification inhibitor is worn off. And so like Fabian says, they work. It's just a question of whether they work long enough that they actually paid for themselves.
Yeah, and I think I see the data. I know some of the data out of Waseca, Jeff, with some of the fall with anhydrous. I mean, they're not always effective. I mean, there are certain circumstances. I mean, you really need to kind of look at, there's information long-term to see what that average is. Because you may see a year here and there where there's a benefit, but economically, I mean, does it really matter in the end? I think is the main question with those inhibitors.
One question that I have also been asked before is with UAN solutions, you know, if there are inhibitors that can be used for that. And the first thing that you need to think about, I mean, what we were discussing earlier is very relevant for that. The other part, too, is with UAN, you already have 25% of that nitrogen is nitrate. So a nitrification inhibitor is not going to help with that 25%. And so, again, the potential that you will see a benefit from having an inhibitor, nitrification inhibitor with that is reduced substantially.
And I think the thing to look at too is the corn's growth patterns. I mean, we look at essentially the rapid uptake period starting at about V5 to R1. I mean, that's the time you really don't want to short yourself. So you have to be somewhat careful where you don't want to be too limiting at that point in time. But I mean, I know people are really trying to go to that spoon feed approach, but you just have to be really careful in terms of not being too overly limited to see, we may see a reduction in yield.
Is there anything growers should be concerned about long-term that could affect how they manage nitrogen, for example, unpredictability in weather?
I mean, I kind of look at this question, and I think kind of the focus here is, you know, looking at how long of a memory growers should have in terms of management. And with the years we've had the last couple of years, you wonder how much, you know, reactionary we are in terms of changing management based on the previous year with that. And I think, you know, kind of looking at I just went through and we're looking at updating the nitrogen guidelines. We saw some pretty significant loss patterns, you know, the last couple of years. Is you know, how you might, really the question here is, should growers, I think, be concerned about that? I mean, do they need to be, you know, drastically upping their rates for just because it was a bad year the year before? You know, really, or how they should be looking at it? Because that's kind of my fear when we start talking about nitrogen loss. You know, a lot of our recommendations are geared towards averages. Kind of look at it as a starting point and then making adjustments at that point. And I think that's just a good discussion point with growers. I mean, if they're looking at who they're making their decisions with their fertilizer in terms of what they need to be doing and how much change they want to be on a yearly basis.
Yeah, I think it's important to, when we talk about the subject today isn't talking about variable rate nitrogen, but it's important to realize when we make a variable rate nitrogen decision, most cases we're waiting until we get farther into the growing season until we have better information about how the year is going on. Similarly, if we think that we've lost significant amounts of nitrogen or if we need higher rates because of challenging weather, you know, it is important to realize that you do still have the opportunity to kind of account for that at that point in time, you know, until roughly about the middle of June, until the corn growth really takes off. And so, you know, the extent to which, again, nitrate loss processes are water driven. So by then you'll have a pretty good idea whether we may have lost it or driven it deep in the soil profile where it's going to take a while for it to get to, as well as we'll have kind of a feeling for if it's been turns out to be a cold, delayed year and so forth. You know, there is certainly the opportunity to, at least if you have enough nitrogen on at planting to get you up to V2, 4, 6, whatever that might be, we can make maybe a more informed decision at that point, too, as far as how much we want to top dress on there to take us to the end of the year.
I think one of the trends that I've seen in south central Minnesota on our medium and fine textured soils is we're clearly getting wetter and more annual rainfall and a wider distribution of when that rainfall occurs. And we have more and more years like last fall where we don't get many opportunities to do fall in after the harvest season. And I think growers need to start thinking about that. Is fall in your game plan extensively in the future? It doesn't mean you have to switch all your acres from fall on ammonia or anhydrous, but maybe it's time to think about switching a portion of them to spring application for less risk and to help manage your workload in the fall.
And I think some of those really poorly drained soils too, Jeff. I mean, I think you look at a lot of the issues where we see really excessive nitrogen requirements come from denitrification in those fields. Is these amazing how much difference, and I think I've seen some data off the drainage plots where kind of point to that based on yield differences, but the drainage, the amount you're getting through the drainage is about the same with the fall versus spring, but there's definite yield advantages with that. So, I mean, maybe prioritizing some of those fields. I mean, although it doesn't make any sense, I mean, you look at wanting to hit some of those really wet fields, you may not be able to get into them early. Those are probably the ones that are going to be worse in terms of loss, for particularly for fall applications.
And that's what I would say in terms of, you know, looking at the weather and how things are changing more in terms of the climate, like the long term, you know, and this obviously is many years, but just these trends that we are seeing is maybe not switching everything that we do, but be targeted. If we have fields where we know that it's more likely that we'll have water ponding for a few days in the spring, those are the sites where you probably don't want to apply much nitrogen because there is more potential for loss. And maybe in other areas where it's higher elevation, then it's okay to do that, to apply some nitrogen.
And Dan talked about how long a memory you need to have. And, of course, we're coming on the heels of a year when it was extremely difficult to get in and side dress or top dress nitrogen, which came at a time of when, of course, that was the trend in agriculture, that we're moving to a lot more side dress. And they kind of came head to head last year. I think it is important to have some context, though. I think most everybody listening to this realizes that's really was the exception, not the rule. Most years we do have decent windows to get in and apply in season at a normal side dress, top dress time.
And that, of course, also depends on soil type. In our area, we have generally pretty good windows, even in wet years, since our soils drain so much better than in the south central part of the state. So that in-season decision making is critical. I keep thinking back to this, you know, I've been involved with these on-farm trials over the last 4 years. It's a project that's been funded by the Department of Ag and Clean Water Fund, and you know, it's been about 200, I think, over the last 4 years. And it's been interesting to me, you know, looking at nitrogen rates, timing, so on and so forth, across, you know, replicated strips across the field. And what's been interesting is that almost across the board, in 2015 and 2016, there weren't much responses to nitrogen. And then you got to 2017 and you had a lot more. So when I look at that, I think, you know, a lot of people would have been more profitable if they'd been able to cut back a little bit those first 2 years. But then 2017 and 2018, that's where having that ability to then go in season and do some sort of application was really going to pay off. So there's that ability to cut in some years, and then if you have that ability to go back in, it really can make a big difference.
Yeah, and I think just one comment on the sandy soils is that, you know, even unpredictability with weather and politically nowadays in these sandy soils is your management with nitrogen also has to do with your management of water. So I think maybe now might be the time to start thinking about investing in some sort of chemigation and upgrading your pivots or your linears to help you do that. Then you can manage your water a little better, and you can also manage your nitrogen a little better, being able to split it throughout the season, which we know politically is a big thing right now.
All right, that about does it for the podcast this week. We'd like to thank the Minnesota Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council, AFREC, for supporting this podcast. For the latest information on nutrient management, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at UMN Nutrient MGMT, where you can also send us questions for future podcast episodes. Thanks for listening.